am going to present to you a very short play. Character one. It's a musical play, by the way. Character one. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Character two. Shut up. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. Look, I'm sure for a lot of people, the holidays are uncomplicatedly wonderful. You see people you love, you give and receive perfect presents, there's no stress, there's only the delightful carrying out of joyous tasks. For those people, well, I'm tempted to say you can go find a different podcast, but no, I welcome them instead. I invite them to stay and learn about what it's like for the other group of people. The ones who have complex minds, interesting minds, fascinatingly complicated minds. Kinds of folks who often listen to this show. My people, my brothers and sisters and siblings. For us, the holidays are a very merry green and red minefield with holly and landmines. If you have a depressive disorder, you might be stuck with the idea that you're doing something wrong if you're not jolly all the time, like you're screwing up, like you're bad, which you're not. Got an anxiety disorder? Well, those shopping lists and decorating responsibilities and social obligations might be enough to really make you miserable. Even the perfectly adjusted folks know they're stressed this time of year, but if you've got a disorder around that, it can be paralyzing. OCD? Well, there are so many details to keep track of. Traumatic stress? Christmas can be a bag of triggers. And the idea of visiting with family that you rarely see can be, oh, let's say fraught. Might be good to check in with your therapist to be ready for all this holiday hoo-ha. Or a couple of therapists. And that's what we're going to do right after a short break.
Hi, everybody. My name is Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Dr. Sydney McElroy.
That is true.
It's important in this context because we host a medical history podcast called
Sawbones.
Oh, I thought we should have worked on that.
Sawbones.
Sawbones isn't afraid to ask the hard-hitting questions. Like, are vaccines as safe and reliable as they want us to believe?
Yes.
Do I have to get a flu shot?
Yes.
Okay. Is science a miracle?
No.
We have a lot of great history for you and a lot of laughs. And sometimes the history is so bad that there's no laughs. But
you'll learn something. You'll feel something.
And it's always Sawbones.
That's right.
Every week on MaximumFun.org.
Dr. Kasera Dayet is a psychotherapist in the Boston area. She's been on the show many times before, and I love her straightforward, sensible approach to the tumultuous experience of having a complicated mind. Dr. Kasera Dayet, welcome back to Depression Mode.
Thanks for having me back.
How, as a therapist, are you holding up this time of year? I can imagine it's like you and retail stores are about as busy as can be.
Yeah, incredibly busy. Everybody is looking for support with all of the things that come up at this time of year. And it's exhausting. It is exhausting. Yeah. So the how am I holding up is I'm pretty tired.
You're pretty tired. Been putting in the hours. What do you hear most? Because you've been at this for a while. What do you hear most every holiday season that people are being troubled by?
I think the two biggest things would be how many sort of holiday obligations people feel like they have, you know, this party that they have to go to or this family gathering or something, you know, a family member that they know they're going to see that they don't want to deal with. And then also just memories of loved ones that they've lost. That's a big one, especially this time of year. And then generally people just are struggling with this season.
Struggling because of the pandemic or because of just this is how it is every year?
Both right now. So yeah. There's the how it is every year, but it's stacked on top of the pandemic, right? We're having to go through another holiday season where people have lost loved ones or their lives have changed in really dramatic ways. Some, you know, not for the best, and others, they are doing better than they expected, but still being stuck in certain patterns with folks at home is hard for them to deal with.
When you think about the holiday stress, these obligations, you know, maybe the brother-in-law or uncle that you're not excited to see, that kind of thing, like, the stress is part of life. Where does it become a situation where you should go get some help, where it's a real problem or a problem that could create other problems?
Mm. That's an interesting question, because I do think that what we define as a problem is relative to each person. And so if I think about some of the things that have been coming up with folks that I see, I specialize in complex trauma and trauma work. And so their concerns tend to be around encountering certain family members who may have been responsible for particular traumas in their life and the triggers around that. And I wouldn't necessarily call a person's reactions to that a problem, right? But if they feel like it is interfering with their ability to actually enjoy time with other family members, or they're not sure how to set boundaries around that, you know, with other family members, that might be a time when having a conversation with someone might be helpful.
Let's talk about the setting boundaries. Let's say you're going out of town for the holidays. Family's going to be there. There is a family member who triggers you, who's, you know, who is problematic, but you've decided, I'm going to deal with this person in order to get the reward of being with all these other people who bring me much more joy, tidings of brightness and joy, comfort and joy. That's I keep forgetting the comfort. You know, what are some things someone can keep in mind to contain the problem?
Mm. Contain is an interesting word because we don't always have allies in our family. So you might be telling people, some people in your family ahead of time, like, I know this particular uncle is going to be here. You know what's going on with him and I, and I'm fine with them being in this space, but I'm probably not going to engage with them. And I would appreciate if you don't force me to do that. Some people, they might express that and their family members still don't respect those boundaries. And so you might say, well, if that's going to be the case, I might decide I'm going to leave early, or, you know, different strategies around negotiating that, or even just staying in a different part of the room, if that's possible. It's not always possible. And I recognize when I say all of this, this is very US-centric, very American. Everyone has different cultural obligations and ways that these things are handled or not handled. And some of us, we don't have the ability to actually say that in our family system. That's just not how things are handled. And so some conversations I've had with people, it might be harder to think about this, but it's like, okay, well, how long can you go to this thing and then decide, okay, I'm going to take my exit at this time? Because they can't say to their family, no, I'm not coming. And then some people might be able to just say, no, I'm not coming if this is going to be the case. So there are different ways to talk about it and think about it.
So it's a way of setting up the boundaries with your allies in the room, if you have allies in the room, and if not, being your own ally in the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. There's planning ahead of time, and then there's existing in the moment. And so, you know, you go to this event, and I want to say, this isn't anything about any particular member of my family. I'm not fixating on it. I think we all get along pretty well, but you're there. Wine's being poured. There's the close proximity. How do you avoid kind of getting into a bad space in the room, in that moment? Are there meditative techniques that you recommend? Are there breathing exercises you recommend?
Not specific exercises, but I will work with people on, first of all, just talking about what they anticipate feeling and also the feelings that they can't plan for, knowing that there's a possibility that it's going to feel worse than you're expecting it's going to feel, or it could feel better than you expected it to feel, and sort of talking about that. But then I also will work with folks on developing mantras for these moments. So really short statements that they can say to themselves, whether I have them like put it in their phone or they have it in a piece of paper in their pocket, different things that they can say to themselves to sort of ground themselves. I'm thinking specifically about people who might be triggered by their parents, for example.
Yes.
You know, and no matter what, they just can get under our skin as much as we plan. Yes. And so it would be like, this is my mom. I understand that this is my mom. I understand why I'm upset right now. And I don't have to do anything about it. Because that's the thing, like, we can kind of get pulled into the same old patterns when that happens. And the mantras are helpful for people to sort of say, we'll just come up with like two or three things for the particular person that they're concerned about that they can think about in the moment. Some people prefer to have like a grounding technique, like having something in their pocket that they can hold, or just finding some breathing room, stepping outside, things like that.
So you talk about having it in your phone or on a slip of paper. Like, mm-hmm. are these mantras long enough that you can't just remember them? I associate mantras with being like a word or two.
Yeah, you can remember them. But some people, when they're feeling really triggered, their mind just goes blank. So knowing that that's there, if you need it, is helpful for people. Because we could talk about it. And I've learned over time, you know, somebody would come back and say to me, you know, Dr. Diet, my mind just went blank. I completely forgot. And it was a couple of simple things that we came up with, but it just went out of my head because I was so upset at seeing this person, or this thing that they said really triggered me. So that's why we have them put it somewhere, so that in the moment they don't have to worry about that.
So is what you said about, this is my mom, this is what she does, is that an mm-hmm. example of a mantra?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, super simple, you know, just because we can forget, right? It's like it becomes reflexive. I need to do something about this. I have to respond to her. We're not thinking those things. It's just reflexes. Those can be really helpful things for people to just, it seems super simple, but people do find it helpful.
Do you need to, and again, returning to the family as a source of stress, families mm-hmm. are wonderful, but they are complicated. It doesn't sound like you need to have made complete peace with this person in order to enjoy a holiday in their presence. Is that right?
Yeah, not at all. This is honoring that, first of all, not everyone has access to a therapist. And even if you are in therapy, that doesn't mean you've necessarily made peace with a certain family member, whatever that means for someone. And it's more about, how do I exist differently in the room and relate differently to how I'm taking in what's happening so that I can enjoy my time with family? So I think letting go of the idea that we are going to change the other person. I think sometimes when people think make peace, they are looking for something specific to happen. And that might not happen. Oftentimes, the thing that we're looking for is never going to happen. So how we relate to being in the presence of family, especially when there are these things happening, is important. Obviously, if we're talking about someone in a family system or just someone in the room who was an abuser or anything like that, I'm not making the recommendation that you need to be in that space. You know, how we think about dealing with that kind of trauma is a little bit, it's adjacent, but it's a little bit different.
So we've talked about the complexity of being in a crowded room of people for whom you have maybe some complex relationships. What about the opposite end? What about if you're talking to a patient of yours who's alone for the holidays, or more alone than they want to be? What's some advice you give them on managing loneliness this time of year?
Yeah, that's a great question. Usually we talk about, you know, what it is the loneliness means for them in terms of community connections or loss of loved ones, or maybe someone's far away from home, you know, especially if they've immigrated here and they're disconnected from family. So we talk about what, if it's important to them to create a sort of ritual around the holidays for themselves that they can do. I'm not the biggest fan of self-care as a term. I know we use it everywhere. It's just got so much baggage.
Right? Yeah.
But taking care of yourself and finding different things you can do around the holiday season can be a way to help manage some of the loneliness. because some people often feel disconnected from their community, we'll talk about, is there something in the community that you can do? Can you help out with like a Toys for Tots fundraiser or anything that's meaningful to you as part of bringing meaning for that time of year when you're feeling lonely?
Okay. You mentioned the stress of the obligations of the parties that you have to go to, the different things that you need to do. It seems like a lot of things people say, well, I have to do this. I need to hit all these markers. I need to hit all these obligations. Do you ever recommend just saying, no, you don't? you know, you don't, you can step away from all this if you really want to. Is that a solution that ever comes up?
Yes. And it's come up quite frequently lately. You know, I talk with my clients about, I wonder what it would be like to not have to survive the holidays.
Mm.
If you thought about it that way, what changes would you make in how you're going about these, quote, obligations?
To not have to endure the holidays, to right. not have to go through all this.
Yeah, yeah. And so just very recently, I made the recommendation to someone, well, what if you did not go to this party? You're worried about person X being there and triggering you, and you have three different things this week. Do you have to go to that one? And the running joke with my clients is there are no shoulds or have tos or musts.
Don't should all over yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always catching them. So they get to the point where they start to catch themselves where they're like, oh, I said I had to do this.
Right.
And we're always thinking about, well, is that true? Is that actually true? And so some people, yeah, they will say, you know what, I'm not going to do this thing this year. I'm not going to go. And they often feel very grateful
yeah.
that that's even something that you could think about doing, which is saying no.
Right, right. On the issue of trauma, it seems like if there are triggers to your traumatic response, to your traumatic stress built into the holiday season, it seems like you're kind of stuck, you know, it's bound to be a hard time. Is there a way of separating a traumatic response from all the triggers of a holiday season?
Not really.
Okay.
I think one of the things about grief in particular and trauma is that we don't always know when it's going to sneak up on us. And it's more about how do I take care of myself, both in the moment, as we've been talking about, but also afterward. Like, what are you going to do the day after you see your family? Do you have another thing to do? Or can we make sure that this is just a day where you have some space for yourself, where you can reflect on what came up, you know, come down a little bit from being so activated, because that's not just going to go away in a day. So I always talk with people about spacing out things that they might be going to, if they are going to go to things, and making sure to check in with themselves. How am I doing right now? If I'm having a hard time, maybe I'm not going to go to this other thing that I have scheduled. Maybe I'm going to take that off my plate. Or maybe I need just a day where I'm doing activity X that mm-hmm. can help me regulate a little bit, because we can't always predict when that's going to happen. I think the best thing to remember is that it could happen. I mean, the same is true for me. I'm a therapist, mm-hmm. and this year is full of anniversaries of things that have a lot of grief tied up in them. And I was just putting up my tree and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sad right now. Oh. And it took me a minute to sort of be like, oh yeah, I know what this is, you know, but being a therapist doesn't make me immune from having a grief reaction or an anniversary reaction, right? Like,
yeah.
And so knowing that that's a thing that can come up is the most important part, not necessarily that we can stop it from happening or separate it.
Right. So it doesn't just jump out at us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to ask about you, because, you know, when we think about all this intensity around the holidays and the triggers that that might be lying in wait for you there. And then all these clients and all, you know, you're not just experiencing the stress, you're experiencing the stress of all these other people. How are you holding up, Dr. Dyett, during this time of year?
Oh, that's a hard question.
Yeah.
It's only a hard question because the answer is, you know, things are tough.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about this yet, but I have a lot of folks struggling with suicidal ideation, you know, thoughts of self-harm. I have had to go through the hospitalization process with people more frequently this year than ever. So I'm always worried, like, how is everyone holding up? How am I going to be holding them together? And for some people, they have very little holding them together. So
yeah.
It's incredibly stressful. I've been seeing some people so many years now that, like, they worry. They're like, you know, how's my therapist doing? And I'm like, don't worry about me. It's okay. I have my own therapist.
Good.
But yeah, so I do, you know, I do a lot of exercising, obviously listening to podcasts as well as talking to you now, just trying to keep making room and space for myself for the things that I enjoy. And taking space in between sessions is crucial for me. Every therapist is different. So some people, they like to just get their notes done so they don't have to worry about it at the end of the day. But for me, I need to take like a 5-minute meditation break or something to just breathe.
Right. So you're in Boston, you're in the Boston area. Do you think it's easier this time of year for people in like Hawaii or Florida, where seasonal affective disorder and just general cloudiness and cold? I'm in Minnesota, where God tries to kill me every year.
Yes, my sister lives in Minnesota.
Okay, great. Yeah, so you know what I mean.
I do.
Is it easier for people in warmer places this time of year?
It depends. Again, you know, the weather does have an impact on people's mood for sure. But some people actually really enjoy the cold weather.
Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of Bostonians really enjoy the cold weather. And so, you know, I don't want to discount SAD as a thing.
Right.
And also, when we're thinking about structural inequities, challenges with access to care, the impacts of COVID now for, you know, last almost 3 years or so, and we just keep running down the list, you could be anywhere.
Right.
And the sky be as beautiful as ever, and you're still having a hard time. And then some people, they might feel guilty about that. Like, I live in this wonderful place and things are always nice, but I feel so miserable. But, you know, because these things, they are what they are, regardless of where we are.
Yes.
And also for some of us, location is a huge part of our mood for sure.
In A Charlie Brown Christmas, Lucy and Charlie Brown talk about pantophobia, which is the fear of everything, says Lucy. And Charlie Brown says, that's it. I have pantophobia. Is pantophobia a real thing?
Is that the question?
That's the question, yeah. Because I don't know what's just been dreamed up by Charles Schultz and what's a real thing.
So I've been talking about this impending sense of doom a lot since COVID.
Right? For good
and
reason.
I feel as though we could call it pantophobia.
Okay.
Because when the world is unpredictable and we never know what's going to happen, you can sort of have a diffuse sense of feeling bad that isn't necessarily tied to something specific. It could be, right? But the constant sort of worry about, like, what's going to happen? When is it going to happen? We wouldn't call that pantophobia. We have other names for these things.
Right.
But, you know, I think that many of us are living with a lot more universal instability, awareness of universal instability than we were before. And not just COVID, but, you know, political, everything.
The environmental.
Yeah, environmental, yeah, everything. Like
social.
The world, you know, it's the meme with the dog and the house that's on fire.
Yes, this is fine. This is fine.
Yeah.
Dr. Kucera Dyett, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me again.
That's Dr. Kucera Dyett. She's online at Cup of Tea Counseling, two L's in counseling.org. Now, Dr. Dyett referenced grief. It's a big topic and it cuts deep, so it's even more important that we're ready to deal with that during the holidays. So let's do that. That's in a moment.
Hi, everyone. I'm Anna McLeod.
And I'm Alexis B. Preston.
And we host a show called Comfort Creatures, the show for every animal lover, be it a creature of scales, six legs, fur, feathers, or fiction. Comfort Creatures is a show for people who prefer their friends to have paws instead of hands.
Unless they are raccoon hands, that is okay.
That is absolutely okay, yeah.
Yes. Every Thursday, we will be talking to guests about their pets, learning about pets in history, art, and even fiction. Plus, we'll discover differences between pet ownership across the pond. It's gonna be a hoot on Maximum Fun.
Megan Devine is a practicing psychotherapist, and she specializes in grief. She's the author of It's Okay That You're Not Okay, and a journaling workbook called How to Carry What Can't Be Fixed. She hosts the podcast Hereafter with Megan Devine. Megan Devine, welcome back to Depression Mode.
Thanks for having me. It's always good to hang out with you.
How, broadly speaking, are you holding up this holiday season?
Broadly speaking, you know, I'm actually doing pretty well. I'm trying to get all of the last admin-y type bits done so that I can take my first end of year vacation in like 6 years. So we'll see how that goes. And I'm trying to keep my eyes on that prize.
Okay. We've been talking in the previous segment with Dr. Kasera Dyett, who brought up how strong grief is. I mean, all the time, but especially this holiday season. Is holiday grief different from regular grief, if there is such a thing as regular grief?
I think if we think about it like a seismograph, right? That it's all the same activity and there are spikes. There are times when there's so much pressure and so many challenging intersection points with the reality of whatever you're living, whoever you've lost, whatever grief you're carrying. In the holiday season, it's like, it's so in your face, all of the like holiday specials and the families coming back together and the piped in Christmas music everywhere. Like, it's just the assault. Even if you're not really a holiday person, I think like the assault of merriment can be a lot for people.
Yeah, almost this sort of requirement of jolliness. It's the only time of year we use the word jolly or the word merry.
And yeah,
it does feel like some kind of edict that's been handed down. Does that contrast in this sort of forced merriment versus this awareness that the person you shared this ritual with isn't there anymore? Does that make the pain more acute for people?
I think it can. I think I'm not a big fan of the blanket statement. I do think that coming into the holiday season, seeing all of these representations of from what the outside look like, happy, intact families, it can make that empty space feel harder because you're like, I don't have my person to do this with. And the reason why I hesitate a little bit there is some people take a lot of comfort in those rituals, those traditions. They feel closer to their person. So it doesn't mean that hurts less, but for some people, they actually find comfort in the holiday season by engaging in those traditions and those rituals because they feel like a sense of continuity or connection in that way.
Is there a way to kind of turn the whole thing to your advantage to some extent? When I think of Christmas, when I think, for instance, about my brother who I lost several years ago, and he would just dork out at Christmas and he would, you know, play pranks and he was just kind of got into the spirit of it in a kind of really mischievous way. And I can think back on that and I can wish that he was still here, but I can almost find a sort of warmth in the memory of him at Christmas. So it seems like the absence can work both ways.
Of course. Yeah, I think the really important thing to remember here is no matter how you are feeling about the holidays or engaging or not engaging in the holidays, the most important thing is that you get to choose it for yourself. I love how you just described that, John, of like you feel some connection and some sweetness. You didn't use the word sweetness, so I'm gonna give you that one. but you feel some connection with who you knew your brother to be. And that's beautiful, and I love that. Now, if that had come from somebody else looking at you, having some feelings around the holiday season and saying, your brother loved Christmas, you should really dork it up for him, that would be a very, very different experience. So no matter what anybody is feeling about the holidays, whether they are finding some sweetness or some warmth in recalling how somebody dorked out about it or how somebody was a total Grinch about it, what's really important is that you get to choose that for yourself. Because coming from the outside, sort of weaponizing the holiday spirit is not going to be good. That's not comfortable. And I think that's a really big thing in the holiday season. It's almost like, you know, people forget about the person who died during the rest of the year. And then they're like, oh, crap, it's Hanukkah. Oh, crap, it's like New Year's Eve. Like, I remember that this person died. Let me make sure that the surviving spouse, sibling, friend, whatever, has the best holiday ever, right? So I think there's also like the holidays remind people who aren't at the epicenter of that loss that a loss occurred. So for the grieving person, they can get a lot of like, your mom loved Christmas. Like, let's make this the best year ever for you. And even that pressure can be a lot. Like, where the heck are you guys the rest of the year? Like, what's up with this?
Yeah, yeah. You know, you talk about how you can choose how to handle this and it's up to you and people shouldn't force a particular reaction on you. How much is it up to you, though? Because when I've been in some really profound grief, if it was up to me, I wouldn't be feeling it so deeply and so painfully. But it felt like it came upon me rather than me choosing it. So how do you achieve that kind of agency where you can choose your response?
That's a great question. So when I'm talking about choosing things for yourself, I'm not talking about choosing how you feel, right? Feelings are feelings, right? It's more about how you engage with the holiday season, how you engage with how you're looking at things or approaching things for yourself, right? So we're talking about behavioral choice, not so much emotional choice. You do sometimes have some agency in how you respond to the feelings that are coming up for yourself, right? Like, I just really feel so raw and so sensitive right now that I need to pretend the holidays aren't happening and just spend this weekend by myself, right? Or I feel so raw and so sensitive this weekend, and I just, even if I just go sit in a corner with a cup of tea, I need to be around some warm bodies and some dogs, right? So I'm going to go to this gathering. So I think that you can find some agency sometimes in there, but certainly feelings are going to do what feelings do.
Yeah. You know, around the holidays, you might be getting together with extended family. You might be spending some time with people you don't ordinarily spend time with. Some of whom might be going through grief as well and might be handling it very different. How best to handle a situation where maybe somebody is having a response that is dissonant to yours and maybe they're not playing by the rules of letting everybody just sort of choose their own path on their actions of dealing with it?
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if like people actually like had really good boundaries and really good skills any time of the year, man. And especially at the holidays? Like, if you think about, I don't get the holidays, man. So if you look at all of the movies, they're like, I have to go home for the holidays. I have to like go spend time with racist Aunt Frida. Like, I hate this stuff. Like, I'm always amazed when I run into somebody who like legit loves the holidays. I'm like, who are you? What kind of life have you lived? Right. But there are people who legit like the holidays. So a few things here. If you are going to extended family gatherings for the holidays, let's go into this knowing that this is not going to be easy. You don't have to be all pessimistic like this is going to suck. But if you go into it understanding that this could have some really challenging moments and I don't see eye to eye with certain people in this family system. And how am I going to take care of myself through this? Right. So some proactive sort of scripting and problem solving for yourself. Like, I'm going to come back to that in a second because I want to take a step back here and say something about family systems.
Sure.
When one person dies, everybody in that family system loses somebody different, right? The patriarch dies, but everybody had a different relationship with that person. So everybody's grief is going to be different. And then you layer on top of that emotional styles, relational styles, generational upbringing, what's acceptable emotion, what's not, who's really swallowed that cultural toxic message of keep calm and carry on and positive outlook at all times. Like, everybody is such a complex universe of different factors coming together. The fact that we find any common ground with anybody at all is magical, right? So I think going into things knowing your cousin twice removed who is pretending like death is nothing at all and it's just a great party and all of these things, like maybe you don't want to be around that, but we also don't need to convince them that they're doing it wrong. Because as I said, everybody's got something different. And I love that you pointed out, John, like maybe all of these other people aren't so kind and welcoming about other ways of processing grief, and they're just right. Gonna take their party into my party and make it weird. So this is why I say, like, coming up, like knowing ahead of time, there are gonna be some really challenging moments in here. How do I wanna handle them? Thinking about that ahead of time can give you sort of an anchor as you go through those events to remind yourself who you are and how you want to be in this moment. So one, grounding yourself in that. Two, come up with one or two stock phrases. You may have to say them 19,000 times at a gathering, but things like, I'm so glad you're finding joy in this season. It's not like that for me. And I don't want to have this conversation with you anymore. Or I'm not comfortable talking about that with you. So I'm going to leave the room, right? There are ways to kindly and clearly give a boundary. The second thing I want to say about that is you don't have to defend how you're handling your own grief, right? You can even say to somebody, you and I had very different relationships with Dad, and I respect the way that you're dealing with your grief. I need you to respect mine, and I'm not going to have this conversation, right? I want you to also think about, before you get into these events, your exit strategy and what you're going to do to take care of yourself if you're feeling yourself getting overwhelmed. You can get overwhelmed even if everybody's lovely, right? So knowing, like, when my left eye starts twitching, I know that I'm about to lose my shit. So I am going to go volunteer to walk the dog. I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm going to volunteer to do that last minute run for eggnog. Like, know that your own signs when you're getting overwhelmed, and consider in advance how you're going to take care of yourself. Again, like, feelings are going to do what feelings are going to do, but having that sense of, I know how to take care of myself in this situation. I'm going to take breaks. I'm going to leave. I'm going to tell somebody that I love them and I'm not here for this conversation right now. Like, take your power where you can.
Is there more value in setting up those boundaries and saying, hey, this is a topic I really don't want to go into, or, hey, that's fascinating. My history with that person was different and my relationship was different, and this is what I need. Like, you can go that route, or you can say, gonna go get some more eggnog.
Yes. Sort of, oh my gosh, away. Yes. Yeah. I mean, those communicating boundaries that clearly is a pretty high level relational skill. And you don't have to have a highly skilled, emotionally honest conversation with people who can't give that back to you. You can, however, enforce a boundary without getting into it. I love what you just said. Like, isn't that interesting? I'm going to go get some eggnog, right? One of my old colleagues used to say, you don't have to attend every argument you're invited to. And I think that that's a really good thing to keep in mind. Like, you can be thinking in your inside voice, this person is batshit nuts right now and I don't want to talk to them. And your outside voice can say, I'm going to go walk the dog. It's really nice to see you. I'll talk to you again later. Right? Like, bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. And that's not denial on your part.
No.
That's self-protection. Another form of boundaries.
That is self-protection and that is boundaries, right? You don't have to show up with a great process conversation for somebody. I mean, if somebody's going to be abusive and snarky and mean, like, you just don't talk to them at all, right? Like, isn't that nice? Mm. I have my, like, resting, not actually interested in you face, but uh-huh, uh-huh. Mm. Isn't that nice? Yeah, tell me more about that.
You, right? You would, like, do well in Minnesota, Megan. I think
really?
I think you could really thrive.
It's too cold for me, man. It's too cold. But I think that brings up a really good point, is that it's very, very important to have boundaries no matter who the person is, and to remember that you don't have to defend yourself to anyone, and you certainly do not have to defend anything about yourself to somebody who is being cruel or mean or abusive. You win those battles by putting on your hat and going outside with the dog. You also said, I don't remember what you said now, but it made me think of proactively having some conversations with family members. So if you know that there's a gathering, you might, let's say you're close to your sister or your mom or whoever, right? You can preemptively have a conversation, however that feels comfortable to you. You could say, you know, this is our first gathering since Dad died. I know you're all aware of that. And I'm wondering how you're feeling about it. Are there things that you want to do? Are there things that are going to feel really difficult for you?
Yeah. Are the rituals of the holidays going to be different?
Yeah.
And how can we prepare for that?
And you're not going for consensus. Consensus is a really stupid way of doing anything, in my opinion. It's very inefficient. But what you're going for is acknowledging that everybody has different needs, and to be able to say, honestly, I don't know what I'm going to need from this season, and I'd love to try some of our old traditions and our old rituals, knowing that if you need to step out or I need to step out, that that's going to be okay, right? It's like setting ground rules before the fact, which is a really, really lovely thing to do for yourself and for other family members.
Hmm. So let's say I'm one of your clients and I say, okay, the holidays are coming up. I've lost someone. There's going to be a lot of family pressure, but I know what I'm going to do about it. I'm just going to drink a lot. I'm just going to get the spiked eggnog and just get fairly plowed. And that's how I'm going to get through it. What do you say to that person?
Okay. So if you're my client, I'm going to say that's one option. Yep. That's one option. Tell me what drinking will do for you.
It'll numb things up. It'll make me not feel things.
Okay. So it sounds like emotional overwhelm and just like too much, too fast, too many things coming at you is going to feel like a lot and you need to check out, right? Okay, yeah. So getting drunk is one way that you might do that. Are there other ways? So I think what happens a lot when we hear a statement like that, I'm just going to get drunk through the holidays, we kind of like, oh my goodness, you can't possibly do that, right? Like if you start freaking out and saying, that's bad, don't do that, we're not hearing what the person is actually asking for, mm-hmm. or the desire or the need that's actually underneath that. Honestly, getting a little drunk is an option. I just want you to have more options in your therapist speak toolbox, right? Because we want to go for what's the goal of that? The goal is to feel less affected by things. Okay, then let's talk about some things that you might do. You might say you're only coming for half an hour. You might bring your dog. I'm stressing the dog thing here, but like you might bring your dog with you so that you have a reason to go outside and to leave, or you have a different focus that you can talk about the dog instead of talking about whatever that person wants to talk about that is stressing you out and making you want to get plastered. I think we're really quick to demonize the things that people do to protect themselves. And I think a different approach of looking for the need underneath that. And how else can we connect with that? I think also for people in recovery, grief is really hard on recovery. Grief is really, really hard on people in recovery because you're trying to not lean on the one thing that has helped you survive this far. Right? So you add the holidays into that. I know your question was not about somebody who's trying to maintain their sobriety, but I think it's important to mention there too that it is definitely a factor. It is definitely a factor. And leaning on whatever has helped keep you sober thus far, you want to double down on that stuff, right? You are absolutely not alone during the holidays or any time of year, right? Like, so whatever has kept you true to your desire for yourself for sobriety, like double down on that stuff and lean on it. You can even do things like, and this is true for anybody, whether you're in recovery or not, an anchor on the outside is always a really good thing, right? So like you're going to text your friend and be like, I have to go to this holiday event. I am dreading it. Can you be on standby and like text me through it, right? I love that. One of the things that happens in family systems is like, you know, grief or no grief, you suddenly like everybody seems like they revert to the worst versions of themselves. And even if you've done a lot of self-work and development, like was it Ram Dass that said, if you think you're enlightened, just go home for the holidays, right? Like things come up, man. So having an anchor to the life you've built for yourself can be a way to keep yourself centered and grounded when you are visiting the other planet of where you came from. And again, that is true for anything, right? That is true for anything. I went back and visited my folks for the first time since before the pandemic. And it was an absolutely lovely visit, probably best visit we've ever had. But I also had two or three friends who knew that I was a little apprehensive. Here's some stuff that might be difficult. And they checked in with me constantly, and I got to text them, and I got to say, like, this is actually going really well. I'm so thankful for this. Like, having an anchor to your real life when you have to go into a situation that feels stressful, like, sometimes that's enough to help you get through it.
Megan Devine, I hope you have a wonderful, happy, and healthy, possibly jolly holiday season this year.
I'm going to go for jolly. Thank you. And you too.
That's Megan Devine. You can find her online at refugeingrief.com. Next time on Depression Mode, baking and clinical psychology have a lot in common.
You're like, I've just created this thing out of like all these ingredients. This is amazing. And then you can also give it to somebody else. A lot of times you don't want people to be feeling sorry for you. You just want to be able to give something and be like, I'm making a difference to somebody else. I wanted to become a clinical psychologist is because through helping other people, that helps me. And baking definitely tied into that.
From the Great British Baking Show, Kim Joy joins us. Our merchandise shop is open and ready to provide you with cool things. We have t-shirts, we have beanies, we have hoodies that all come with the phrase, I'm glad you're here, emblazoned on them. Because, yeah, it's just something I started saying for this show, but it really seems to have caught on. And it's a good message to send other people and send yourself. We have note cards, we have blankets, we have Depression Mode sweatpants. And because, you know, people need sweatpants sometimes. So check that out. It's at maxfunstore.com. And you can go to the little menu and select Depression Mode, and you can see all of our cool Depression Mode merch. We ask you to support our show so that we can continue to exist. If you already do support the show, thank you. If not, we need your help. If you're using this show and it's helping you, then we ask you to help make it possible. It's easy too. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join and you can find a level that works for you and select Depression Mode, and you are then helping. Be sure to hit subscribe. Also, that helps. Give us 5-star ratings, write reviews. That helps get the message out about the show to the world so we can help more people. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available in the United States by calling 988. It's an easy number to remember, 988. Keep it in mind. The Crisis Text Line, also free and always available. Text the word HOME to 741-741. Our electric mail address is depressionmode@maximumfun.org. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. A lot of good conversation happening over there, sometimes about the show, often just about people supporting each other through the world of mental health. Our Depression Mode newsletter is available on Substack. Search that up. I'm on Twitter at John Moe. Hi, credits listeners. I recently came across a small bistro, and the name of the bistro was Monsieur Pickles Bistro. It was named after a cat. And ever since I saw it, I've just been mumbling that phrase to myself. Monsieur Pickles Bistro. I think I just like the phonetic sound of Monsieur Pickles Bistro. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson, and we get booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason, maybe there's no reason, I just keep believing. No one knows the answer, maybe there's no answer, I just keep on dancing.
Hi, this is Ali from Cape Town, South Africa. Depression and anxiety are worldwide. You're not only not alone, you're in great company. Keep going.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.